take your hands off that mute button, because the Lotus Effect is coming up right fucking now!
This is a new live son of a bitch.
Bull frickin' horse shit.
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast, my only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, right. You know exactly what we're talking about. We've been doing it officially 214 times, because it is episode 214 of The Lotus Effect, which we provisionally titled Stoned Cold, because I think that really describes how we've been the last couple of weeks. We've been stoned, and it's been cold. But as you know, the show is made up, the content doesn't matter, and I am still regrettably frozen and Phoenix.
First things first, where's your shit at? I've got a turtle head poking out.
Christ, did a cow shit in here?
Yeah, well, apparently it did. I'm Phone Boy. And I had to, and it was he who smelt it dealt it. That's the
hey, the who applied it denied it.
I suppose.
No, okay, so I have to tell a really funny story, especially because the person who this happened to is in our chat tonight. I'm not going to name names. Someone who I have a back channel connection to woke himself up because he farted. And it was so damn funny because not only did he do that, but then he's going, did the dog take shit? And then he realized, nope, that was just my own brand creeping up. So way to go. And you know who you are. But irrelevant to the fact, we want to also welcome not only our shitty listeners, hey-o, just kidding, but we also want to welcome our Apple Podcasts and Spotify listeners. Our listeners are not shitty. I'm just joking. But, you know, don't freak out, because it's only the beginning.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
We're there.
I just had an orgasm.
The guy is jizzing all over himself.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Yeah, the Lotus does cause people to freak out in interesting and unique ways, whether it's figuring out how to establish yourself as a permanent fixture in the chat or just listening to the silly stuff that comes out of our mouths. However or wherever the Lotus is affecting you today, we most definitely want to hear about it.
I got mail! Yay!
I got you a dollar.
Now, we say it every week. We put a lot of effort into making this show happen, and it operates on the 3T model, time, talent, and treasure. We put a lot of time into this bitch. It takes a lot of talent to get it off of the ground, and we like when you send us some treasure, but that's not what the 3Ts are really about. Of course, it's about the time that you spend interacting with us, joining us in the chat and stuff. It's the talent that you provide, the trolling, the jokes, the knowledge even. And of course, If you like to send us your treasure, you can do that by going to lotuseffect.show, clicking on the green We Like Money button, and sending us some of your fiat fun coupons via PayPal. Or if you're like me and you like Cash App, it's $TheLotusEffect33. Now, we also have a merch store and a boutique. So you have lotuseffect.shop where you can buy crap smeared with our brand feces. You can also go to lotusboutique.com, I believe it is.
I think it's
the lotusboutique.shop.
We need to put it in the script.
And I apologize. That is actually the Etsy shop where yours truly has begun or is beginning to post some of the products for sale that may or may not be Lotus branded. But we would like to absolutely recognize one of our wonderful pedal heads for all of the time, talent, and treasure that he has donated this week. None other than Mr. Cotton Gin at his monthly donation of $5.
Oh, you're the executive producer.
That's right. And doing some live tech support in the chat for one of our listeners as well as we're doing this shit show. So thank you, Cotton Gin, for your courage and all that you do for our show. Now, we completely understand that you might not have the scratch to send us your cash. That's cool. We know times are wicked tight. But what really means a lot to us is letting us know that you're listening. It only takes a moment or two. And a few ways that you can do it is to start by subscribing to the podcast in your favorite podcast app. You can find, follow, rate, and review us. You can also find us for sure in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere where you can add an RSS feed. There's also the element of checking out the Lotus Cafe on YouTube. Now, I will tell you that it is an electric pink lotus as a emblem or icon. There are numerous channels with this name. So if you want to check out the things that we cook during the What's Phoenix Cooking segment.
I actually have a link in the show notes. Look at that.
So if you check out the notes for this show, you'll find the link to that channel so you won't have to wade through the tons of different ones wondering which one it is. Well, it's right there for you in the show notes. So that's another way that you can show value is go and check out the channel and give it a like, give it a subscribe, again, sending the act back. Now, we talk about this all the time. The best social media that you can get on is definitely
Mastodon.
That's right. Jump on that massive dong. He is at Foamboy at lotuseffect.social. I'm at Phoenix, P-H-E-O-N-I-X, at lotuseffect.social. You can send us email at feedback@lotuseffect.show. Or, for those of you more saucy folks, I don't give a fuck at lotuseffect.show. Both valid emails that you can reach us by. Of course, snail mail. We like to send and receive. There are a few pedal heads who are soon to be having packages arrive to them as a thank you for listening to the show. And if you would like to send us something, a little way to give back what we give to you all, you can hit us up in the back channel. We'll be glad to provide that address for you. One of the biggest ways, best ways, we've been touting it all show, including the live tech support occurring. Join us in the chat sometime. We do Rideshare Radio every other week on Fridays when we're not doing 2.5 bends. That fun all starts no matter the week. Fridays at 9 Eastern, 8 Central. You can join us during this show with Studio 33 that follows right on its heels. That fun starts at 8:30 Eastern for the pre-cum, followed by this shit show, usually starting at 9 Eastern. But tonight, we had a little late start. And details on how to get in on all of that are located at lotuseffect.live. Now, you can also give us feedback by calling or texting 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
Yeah, that line is definitely boozy because it is Google Voice and it mangles transcripts and you could end up becoming a show title whether you want to or not. Now, another reason you would be calling 253-237-3321, other than to tell us that you love us, you don't love us, whatever you want to tell us about your way in for the week. And this week, we want to know your best snow story. Since it's been brutally cold, we've had several bouts of snow here, which doesn't often happen. As Phone Boy has said, I did not move to the south to freeze my ass off, but I digress. Let us know your best snow story. It can be either something you did in the snow. It can even be a story of this really sucked, but I wanted to share it with everybody. So call 253-237-3321 and tell us about it. And I think now, Phone Boy, we've explained ourselves really well. We should take it from Dr. Johnny Fever.
Yes, we should. And there's a button here. Wait a minute. Where's that button? It's actually...
It's not the mute button!
No, it's not the mute button this time. But it is truly... Yeah, I have to find the thing that says WKRP.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor. I can take it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Phone Boy is going to be able to take it by the end of the night, because here's what we don't want.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit. Yeah.
That's right. We don't want audio routing shit going wrong, and we don't want any of your shit if you can't be respectful. We like a good bit of ball busting. We like trolling, but we do not tolerate disrespect. Don't be prejudiced and, you know, racist. That's my job.
Don't be a dick.
Yeah. No, but you can be a phoenix. Hell no. That's my job too, damn it. There's only one room for one phoenix up in here, and it's me. So seriously, though, just be respectful when you give us feedback. Don't be anti-Semitic. Don't be prejudiced. I mean, we joke about it, but we don't hate anyone. We may strongly dislike many people, but we don't hate anyone. So just be respectful. That's all we ask. Otherwise, shut the fuck up. And let's get some advice over here.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
To do what? I'm not sure.
But... Oh, I'm sure the listeners who've been here for longer than 30 seconds know exactly what they're counting us on us to do, which is to start off the way we start every show with the health segment that's never, ever, ever.
Brought to you by Pfizer.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and Pfizer, I'm sure, would happily sell you some drugs for the following: a weird itchy rash that happens to be linked to the keto diet, but no one knows why.
This itchy rash needs special treatment.
Yeah. Here's the first problem I have with just, let's start with the title of this particular article we're going to dig into. An itchy rash that they automatically go, hey, we have no idea what else it could be possibly going on. Oh, has to be the fact you stopped eating all the garbage. No other choice. Go ahead, phone boy.
Exactly. A 20-year-old man in Taiwan went to a dermatology clinic for a strange rash that had developed across his shoulders and chest. The raised, red, and itchy condition had been bothering him for a full month. By this point, he had also developed patches of pigmented skin interlaced with the red rash. Now, according to a case report in the New England Journal of Medicine, a skin biopsy showed swelling between his skin cells and inflammation around blood vessels, but testing came up negative for other common signs of skin conditions, leaving doctors with few leads. The doctors ultimately came to a diagnosis not by analyzing his skin further, but by hearing about his diet.
Okay, so hold on. I just had a thought. So you know how we talk about keto is a completely bullshit marketing term for obvious reasons, because the products are bullshit. They truly have people believing that you can eat all of these sweet treats and still lose weight. Yeah, you'll shit yourself to death. It's called fake sugar. So my thought was this, is it possible, because I'm pretty sure this guy's probably not eating the real keto diet you should be eating, where you're not eating the fake sugars and you're not still trying to sneak in those evil grains and things like that, because of course it's not the grains and the sugars and things like that that are making you fat as fuck. No, it's definitely gotta be the bacon and the, you know, steak and
so you talk about diet. Okay, so this guy was in Taiwan. What was his actual diet? I mean, that's the other thing that this article says. Well, he said he had a keto diet, but didn't talk about what the diet was. So,
right, and well, the whole reason that I even, you know, had that little mini rant was because what I was thinking about on this was, is it possible? Let's say, just for argument's sake, because, I mean, Taiwan's not completely a cutoff from the world society. I'm sure they have, you know,
the brands tout
keto as the bullshit marketing
term.
Yeah,
I'm sure they do, but they're probably different than the brands over here. And there's also probably different food laws and stuff in Taiwan.
Right, but so follow my thought. Okay. Is it possible, per se, okay, that... Now, okay, you've been to multiple different countries. Do multiple different countries, do they have any American products?
Yeah, it
I mean, America has products that they import from.
Yeah, there's a few
other
things.
Places.
Yeah, they're similar products. We'd probably say.
Okay, I'm fair with similar.
Because they're also, by the way, they're also made by the same multi-conglomerate companies that control. Almost all food is made by like 10 companies or something like.
Okay, so all right, so that's exactly what I was trying to ascertain was the likelihood that the garbage that they put in these keto things to try to get you to believe that, oh, if I eat this, I'm just going to magically be, you know, thin. I'm wondering if he didn't have an allergic reaction to the ingredients if he was consuming some of those mass marketed bullshit marketing term products.
Well, yeah, we don't really know. And that's the thing about this article. It's like, well, yeah, what was his actual diet? Because that might have a lot, that might be much more interesting. Of course, I don't think you'll ever get that story anyway. So, all right, anyway, let's go back to the story here. There's one side effect that's well established but little known and still puzzling to doctors, the keto rash, or prurigo pigmentosa. This rash fits the man's case perfectly, raised red, inchy bumps on the neck, chest, and back, with areas of hyperpigmentation also developing. Now, the rash was first identified in Japan in 1971, about the beginning time of the fucked up food system, where it was mostly seen in women. Now, while it has been consistently linked to metabolic disorders and dietary changes, experts still don't understand what causes it. It's seen not only in people on a keto diet, but also in people with diabetes and those who have had bariatric surgery or are fasting. Wait a minute. How is fasting?
That has nothing to do with the diet.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to be on keto to fast.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and hold on. Now let's dig into this just a little bit more. What's going on with people with diabetes? Well, they're consuming these products that claim that, oh, if you're on diabetes, you can still have this, you can still have that. Again, the bullshit marketing term of keto.
The bullshit marketing of food. I mean, calling it food, that's all.
Okay, but follow my logic, because going with the fact that this is also seen with people who've had bariatric surgery, what do you think these people are consuming?
Same shit.
Fake sugars.
Fake shit, yeah.
Because they're eating the Carbmaster yogurt, which has the fake sugar. They're eating the Snackwell cookies that has the fake sugar. I can keep going.
Yeah, I know. I thought the Snackwells were like low fat or something, you know.
Okay, they may be, and I'm actually going to pull this up now because I want to see if I misspoke. But irrelevant, I still think they're eating the fake sugar because
they're eating all kinds of other fake shit. I mean, bottom line, it doesn't really matter what they're. Yeah, but okay, so yeah, what are they eating? Nobody actually talks about that. They talk about diet, but they don't actually talk about the thing that people actually want to hear about. What do you fucking eat? Right? Because they can say it's a keto diet. Oh, really? Did they call it a keto diet? Well, what did they eat? Well, and then they ask it in food frequency question. Anyway, like I could probably go on about this, but we don't know what they fucking ate. So yeah, we can blame the diet. Yeah, because it's this nebulous thing. We don't know. All right. Anyway, in a review this month, researchers in Saudi Arabia noticed that a leading hypothesis is that the high levels of ketones in the blood trigger inflammation around blood vessels by a type of white blood cells called neutrophils. And this inflammation is what causes the rash, which develops in different stages. Are you fucking kidding me? That's bullshit.
That is the biggest bullshit.
Your body can handle ketones. It makes ketones. In fact, your brain actually prefers ketones. So, yeah, I'm not buying any of this shit. Now, of course, in this case, they medicated the guy with a 2-week course of
doxycycline.
Doxycycline, and told him to ditch his keto diet. I wonder if we don't know if he did or not. He said the rash was gone after a week, and I'm sure it was the meds that did it, not changing the diet. I mean, come on.
Okay, but here's the thing. I'm actually going to dig in. I may have misspoken in all fairness, because what the Snackwells have in them for sugars, okay, is sugar, invert sugar, and corn syrup. Okay, now wait. Because I went a little further and said, what's invert sugar? Well, invert sugar is a liquid sweetener made by breaking down sucralose or table sugar into glucose and fructose through hydrolysis. Isn't that just yummy?
Oh, well, it makes it...
It results in a syrup that's sweeter.
Yes.
I just... can't.
It's like high fructose
even.
Corn syrup.
It is. It is absolutely nauseating just looking at the picture of this particular product, all syrupy and no thank you. I'm ashamed that I used to actually consume those cookies back in the days when I was dumb and actually thought, gee, I'm cutting out the bad stuff. Boy, how wrong was I. Now, this is something that you folks might be interested in, however, because if you're like us, sometimes you're out on the road and you just need that cup of joe. Maybe you've already finished the one you brought with you, if you're anything like me, and you just really, really need a cup of coffee to get you through the rest of your day. Well, you might swing into a Starbucks, you might swing into a Dunkin' Donuts, or you might swing into wherever and grab a hot cup. But did you know that to-go coffee cups release thousands of microplastics? So how do we stay safe?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
Exactly. How do you mean?
There's a great future in plastics.
Now, every day, millions of people enjoy their coffee, tea, or other beverages from disposable cups, often without a second thought about what might be lurking in their drinks. However, research published in the Journal of Hazardous Materials, plastics has revealed a surprising concern. These cups can release tiny plastic particles, known as microplastics, into the beverages they hold, especially when exposed to hot liquids.
I mean, this we've been talking about the microplastic shit for a while, and it's like, okay, this is just yet another one of those sources, right? You know,
how many people are thinking about the fact when you get handed that like cardboardy kind of cup, and maybe it used to be the styrofoam. You remember back when, well, you weren't a D&D guy, but like Tim Hortons used to come in a styrofoam cup.
Yeah. I mean, I think the old McDonald's coffee used to too, right?
Yes. Oh, McDonald's coffee came in styrofoam cups.
Yes, exactly.
But that's my thing. That's what I'm saying is like, I remember the days when they had styrofoam cups. Then they moved to these paper cups that are thick paper. They have to give you this corrugated band to put around it so you don't burn your damn hand. Now we have to worry about the fact that these damn cups are leaching microplastics into our coffee.
And you remember when they had to say caution, contents may be hot.
That's because some dumb old bitch spilled Mickey D's coffee on herself and got like a milli of a settlement because, oh, I didn't know the coffee was hot. Well, holy fuck, lady, the boiling in the pot, the steam coming off of it, not the fact you ordered a hot coffee. None of this clued you in. Might be a little hot. No, nothing. Okay.
We should probably get on and talk about actually how small microplastics are.
We really should. You know, you're the one who started talking about the to-go cups. I was wondering if you had something else with that.
No, I didn't have anything with that. It was like I said, it was just interjecting into the story flow here a little bit. That was all I had to say about it.
Well, that's fine. But since you asked, microplastics are fragments smaller than 5 millimeters, and they're increasingly recognized as a public health concern because they can be ingested or inhaled by humans, accumulate in organs like the lungs or digestive tract, and potentially cause inflammation or other health issues. So researchers further found that even paper cups lined with polyethylene can release microplastics, albeit in lesser amounts than fully plastic cups. Now I'm going to stop right there. Stop right there. Unless you're talking about a reusable to-go cup, and I'm thinking like the coffee mugs they sell at truck stops. I mean, I do have the red cup from Starbucks, but that thing doesn't hold heat worth a shit. Like,
no, it doesn't.
That's only a cup I would use if I'm going to drink something real fast and definitely not hot, but I digress.
Yeah, exactly.
So first, I stopped and went, okay, who's drinking their coffee out of a plastic cup? I don't, and I'm not saying a to-go cup. I'm saying like a reusable mug anymore. Who's using plastic still? So to learn more about the issue, the researchers took a two-pronged approach. They first analyzed data from 30 previous studies compiling 237 observations related to microplastic release from various plastic products. This analysis focused on factors such as water temperature and soaking time in relation to microplastic release. Secondly, the research team conducted a case study comparing two common types of disposable cups, pure polyethylene and paper-lined cups with polyethylene coating. Paper cups lined with a polyethylene coating. Their experiments involved filling the cups with deionized water at two temperatures, cold at 41 Fahrenheit 5 Celsius and hot 150 Fahrenheit 60 Celsius.
Okay, hold on a moment though. Okay, so my question is, right, because sometimes, you know, I would say, well, they don't boil the, usually the coffee's not boiling, but I would suspect in some places those temperatures, that 140 Fahrenheit might be too cold. I don't know. It depends on.
Yeah, if you've ever seen some of the heat that Starbucks themselves put behind some of that coffee, especially with the way people order it. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely,
above that 140 threshold.
Yeah, because if they're using, if it's an Americano, for instance, right, where they're filling it with water, yeah, they're pulling it from a hot tap. Now, granted, it may not be boiling water, but I'm assuming it's, a lot hotter than 140. I mean, certainly what comes out of my tea kettle when I pour something into it, yeah, I'm pouring boiling water into a cup, but I don't have any plastic cups or anything that I'm using for that shit.
You know
but.
What? I've got a great idea, phone boy. A little scientific research we can do for next week's show if you're interested. We can actually, because we have a thermometer, we can boil the water and then we can find out just exactly what the temperature is when you boil the water that it's coming out and assume that the big commercial things at coffee places like Starbucks and Drunk Dog Nuts is going to be at least that hot.
Well, you might. It depends on when they pour it in. So it might be. It's probably more measuring the liquid. If you go buy it one of these places, yeah, actually measure it there, and you say this is exactly what it's. You know.
I mean, that's a good point. We have some listeners talking about the fact that you know, it can be anywhere between 212 if it's boiling,
yeah,
and between 194 and 204. Oh, yeah. Is what the temperature of espresso by itself is. So you're well exceeding those temperatures that they tested these cups at. And they also took steps to prevent contamination, okay, in this experiment. And they measured after 30 minutes, they filtered the water to collect any microplastics that had leached into it. So at those temperatures, you can be assured that the findings were much lower than they probably would have been if they had tested it at temperatures of real world application, like the temperature of espresso when it's going into a cup, or, you know, boiling water being added for an Americano or something.
Yeah, although if it's espresso, it's probably hopefully going to be a small amount, and yeah, you may still get less microplastics, but you still might get the more per capita, because yeah, the hotter it is, I'm sure it causes all of that stuff to leak out. That's just yum plastic.
Pretty much, you know, plastic coffee. So tools such as scanning electron microscopes and atomic force microscopes were used to examine the size and surface features of the microscopic plastics and the cups. Additionally, the team used Fourier transform infrared, or FTIR, spectroscopy to identify the chemical composition and to detect changes in the cup's materials after exposure to water at different temperatures. The review of studies confirmed a clear pattern. As water temperature increases, so does the release of microplastics from plastic products. Doesn't that seem, no pun intended, like a water is wet statement?
Well, yeah, I mean, duh. I mean, a lot of these articles seem like they're, you know.
I'm just saying, you know, the hotter it is, the more microplastics are released. That just seems like a common sense outcome.
Yeah, no kidding.
So the case study revealed that PE cups, which are the polyethylene, the pure polyethylene cups, okay, released more microplastics than the coated paper cups under both cold and hot conditions. Again, this should not come as a surprise, but I digress. Specifically, this happened when the water temperature increased from 41 to 140 Fahrenheit. So almost a 100-degree increase occurring. The microplastic release from the polyethylene-only cups rose by 32.7%, and the coated cups didn't show a temperature-dependent increase. So at least that's something, but there's also a lot less polyethylene on those coated cups. So microscopic analysis showed that the surface of the pure polyethylene cups became rougher and more irregular after exposure to hot water, likely due to physical degradation, which may have led to greater shedding of microplastics. I'm just going to stop right there, because anybody listening right now has probably made the stupid mistake of pouring a hot beverage into one of those plastic, like, solo cup type cups, and you see it immediately start to deform. Again, this article has a lot of no shit Sherlock things in it. Of course it's caused by physical degradation. Duh. You melt plastic, what does it do? It degrades. It starts shrinking in on itself and melting. Oh, you don't think that's going to add the microplastics to the liquid?
I have a funny story about that. So one time as a kid, I guess I'd made some bacon or something, and I made the mistake of pouring the bacon grease into one of these little Yoplait containers.
Oh, that's an immediate melt.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Mess.
Yeah. I just remembered that as you were talking about this. I'm sorry. I had to share that because that was a funny anecdote. But
no, but if you've never poured water into a cup, same damn exact thing happen.
Yeah.
If it's thinner type plastic, yeah, it's going down like a house of cards.
Yeah.
So it's just amazing to me. Like I said, there's a lot of no shit Sherlock in this. So,
yeah, but the researchers estimated.
Yeah, they estimated that someone drinking 300 milliliters of coffee daily from the polyethylene-only cups could ingest about 363,000 microplastic particles per year. Now, using the paper cups could reduce this intake to about 244,000 particles annually. I get an idea. I'm going to give you a newsflash right here. No, Lotus Effect exclusive. You know how I'll bet I can reduce your particle consumption on your hot coffee, tea, and beverages to zero? Listen closely. Come closely to the speaker. Put your fucking shit in a metal cup. PSA over. So, of course, the winning move here is not to use these disposable cups. As we know, the article suggests using cups that are biodegradable, made of a compostable biopolymer like polyhydroxy, basically PHA. If I have to spend that time trying to pronounce it, you shouldn't be drinking out of it. So they claim it's safe, but given the industry's track record with safety, that's a little hard to believe. Like I said, newsflash, you don't want any microplastics in your morning coffee. Use a ceramic coffee mug. If you're on the go, use a metal coffee mug. Guess what? They're insulated and they keep your coffee really nice and hot. Or if you're like me, they keep it really nice and cold.
Well, there you go. Yeah. All right. Speaking of no shit Sherlock, maybe for reasons that people... anyway.
They'll become evident when we go through it.
Yeah, people from sexual minorities really do die younger, according to new data.
You might die.
Now, new data has revealed something in the UK has never seen before. Clear evidence that sexual minority people, my God, you know, they're dehumanized. Okay, so, you know, we talk about the LGBTQLMNOP people, right? You know. They don't. It completely just de-identifies all of these people. It treats them like others. That just occurred to me randomly here as I'm sitting there. But anyway, they die earlier and at higher rates than their straight or heterosexual peers. Now, for the first time, the Office for National Statistics in the UK, or the ONS, has published overall mortality rates by sexual orientation in England and Wales. The findings come from a new bulletin that links voluntary sexual orientation data collected in the 2021 census with the death registrations between March 2021 and November 2024. The linkage was possible for people with valid NHS identification numbers, allowing researchers to examine patterns of death across a population of nearly 29 million adults. Evidence on whether sexual minority people, oh my God, if... experience higher overall mortality has been mixed, with many previous studies limited by small sample sizes, indirect measures of sexual orientation, or a focus on specific causes of death rather than all-cause mortality. The new ONS analysis is the first UK study to link self-reported sexual orientation from the census with national death registrations, allowing population-level mortality rates to be examined across millions of people. Sounds exciting. The headline result is difficult to ignore. People identifying as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or another minority's sexual orientation were 30% more likely to die from any cause during the study period than those identifying as straight or heterosexual. Now, in standardized terms, this equates to 982.8 deaths per 100,000 people in the LGB plus group, compared with 752.6 per 100,000 among straight or heterosexual people. Now, sexual orientation was included in the census for the first time in 2021. Around 92.5% of people age 16 and over answered the question. I think the 7.5% that didn't answer the question was probably smarter than in my opinion. That meant 44.9 million people apparently answered this question. Now, most respondents identified as straight or heterosexual, while 3.2% identified with an LGB plus orientation. A further 7.5% chose not to answer. Linking census responses to death records, the final ONS analysis covered just under 28.7 million people. Now,
Hold on. I just had a thought about something.
Okay.
This says it was included in the census for the first time in 21. The census occurred in 20.
Well, no, this is in the UK, honey.
Oh, might be. Sorry. I lost for a second that it was UK. Proceed.
Yes. So, let's see. While this is the first UK release to examine all cause of mortality by sexual orientation, it builds on earlier ONS findings. And in April 2025, the agency reported that people identifying as LGB plus had more than double the risk of suicide and 2.5 times the risk of intentional self-harm compared with straight or heterosexual people. The most distressing findings in the new ONS release concern young people. Among those aged 26 to 24 who identified as LGB plus, suicide accounted for 45.3% of all deaths. Among straight or heterosexual people of the same age, the figure was 26.6%.
Yeah, that's because straights don't necessarily have the same issues as the LGBTQ LMNOP communitar that... I'm sorry, but after the Democrats made that huge push in schools, like, oh, Tommy, don't you want to be Tammy? Don't you want to get rid of that bothersome Willie and have an innie and a VJJ? No, teach. I really fought and don't. I like the hog leg in my jeans, thanks. I mean, seriously, this is out of bounds.
Yeah. Now, they say suicide is preventable, but it rarely has a single cause. Now, what these findings make clear is that living in today's society still places a heavier burden on sexual minority people, particularly the young. Yeah, especially when your parents are the ones foisting would you rather have a VJ, you know, discussion?
I'm sorry, like the 8-year-old who was like, I want to be a girl. And yeah. They were like, well, let's just get you that surgery there, punkin.
Yes. Well, this is, yes.
That's child abuse.
Yeah. Not to mention, yeah, which SSRIs are you on? Yeah, that's a great yes. Observation. That, yes. You know, I remember years ago when, always the question, yeah, I can hear JCD saying in my head, what drugs are they on? They'll never ask that question.
No, because they know if they did, it would cause the pharmaceutical market to collapse in on itself.
Yeah, well, we don't want the truth. So, it says that the suicide burden shows up not only in mental health statistics, but in patterns of physical illness and early death. Now, there are a few things with this study that when I was actually pulling this story into the script and, you know, I did a little research. I actually tried to sort out the actual study, right? Because the UK had posted, it was posted on a government website in the UK. So here's a few things with the study. Given the risk is 30% higher of dying. Now, this falls into the same category as what the medical pharmaceutical industrial complex does with studies that support plant-based diets and statin drugs, which use studies with similar risk ratios to or studies with similar risk ratios to justify their point. And when I say
you can
similar,
pretty much find anything to support your hypothesis if you dig and look long enough.
That's right. And so, and it seems like they're doing exactly what the food industry does with red meat, grouping in gays and lesbians with other sexual minorities, some of which subject themselves to additional hormones and or surgery that a non-trans person may not even consider, right? You know, it's along the lines of the bully steed question. Which SSRIs are you on, right? Now, of course, the article ends with the expected propaganda. If sexual minority young people were able to grow up in a safer, more inclusive environments, these stark inadequacies might not exist. And
right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so many things you could, I don't know. Like, I just.
All right, hold on, because I'm going to Phoenix rant over this. Safer, more inclusive environments. Mm-hmm. Like environments where we are a cat and we have a litter box in the girls' room at the high school. Environments where I have to know your sexual fucking orientation on your name tag. Like, I care what you do in your bedroom with whoever or whatever you identify with, because at the point at which you stop realizing, you have one of two options, a hole or a pole. There's no third option. When you started with that as your basis, you lost the argument right then and there. I don't have to know what you do in your bedroom. I, for that matter, don't care what you do in your bedroom.
I don't care if you're sacrificing goats
and singing to fucking Beelzebub, bitch. I don't care. I don't give a fuck what you do sexually. You know what I care about? Can you ring up my purchase? Can you bag my groceries? Can you do whatever the fuck job you're being paid to do while I have to be subjected to your fucking inclusiveness? I hate that. Oh, more inclusive environments. We have to be all accepting and cute and da-da-da-da-da. Do you know how fucking offensive it is to see fucking guys? Clear on guys. Adam's apple. Okay? Dick big enough to choke a fucking elephant. And you got nails that are 5 feet fucking long. And you talk like this because, like, girlfriend, get the fuck out of my face.
My goodness. So, yeah, and it's funny because there's an ad that shows up when we're watching Buzzer, right? Watching.
Oh my gosh, the podcast.
We watch Buzzer, which only shows fine quality shows that have the Mark Goodson seal of approval, so that you know,
not propaganda filled at all.
Yeah, no, exactly, but. So there, at least it's funny shit, you know. What was it we saw the other night? Like Bob Barker and like William Shatner.
Oh my god, a young Will Shatner was some fun. It was Tattletales. It was
yeah, we were watching Tattletales
with their wives.
Yes, exactly.
We love watching that show. But to circle back to this, okay, look. I spent many years, okay, in the LGBT community, and this really triggered me because seeing what I've seen in the last 10 years, we'll say, with the fact I have kids who missed, and maybe they didn't, maybe they just weren't telling me about the obvious attempt to brainwash them into thinking that if they had a dick, they needed to cut it off, or if they had a twat, they needed to fucking strap one on and have it hog-legging in school as they've got their girlfriend on their arm and a fucking toothpick in their jaw.
Okay, so I can speak to that a little bit, because both of my children had friends that ended up being trans at some point. So I don't know what they were exposed to, because I didn't sit there in high school or whatever with them, you know, listening to the bullshit that they'd, but obviously now, granted, this was on the left coast. And so the propaganda is really high there. So yeah, like I said, both of my children had friends that became trans at some point.
But I don't think it's a genuine thing. I think it's kind of okay. So I'll say it like this. I think, and you may not have noticed it, I noticed in our generation, like when we got to high school, that's when it started being, well, I mean, there's 3 years difference between you and I, but what I saw in high school was that's when we had a form of our own sexual liberation going on. You know, we were the ones who pinned condoms to our shirts and got kicked out of school to protest the fact you should be, you know, having safer sex. This is where we started seeing that it was cool to be gay. It was cool to be a lesbian. It was, you know, whatever. It was it was where goth really started, was during high school years for me. And the whole, you know, grunge started the beginning, you know, of high school for us. The beginning of 90s for me was, you know, high school. Yeah. Yeah. That was our thing, okay? And to me, the whole trans thing and the whole non-binary or whatever, okay, it feels like this is my children's generation's stupid bullshit. Except for they've taken it to a new level. Now it's not just, let's don a pair of Doc Martens and jeans and flannels and go traipse around like the dykes we are, okay? Now it's literally, hey, Mom, I want to get my dick cut off because I want to have a pussy because I like cock. No, because that's not who you are. Five-year-old Timmy was playing with dinosaurs yesterday. Now he wants to be, you know, Tammy? No.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think back because I was in white, you know, we call White Privilege Academy in Hawaii. So I wasn't at high school. Yeah, the people I don't think I was with a representative population because I had a bunch of people that were, you know, I went to a school with a bunch of people that didn't, that weren't, you know, that they came from like Asia and shit like that. So there were people from all over the place. So I don't think I had a representative sample. But now when I went to White Privilege University with the Jesuits, right? Yeah, that, you know, it's kind of weird. Yeah, I think even the 90s, right, which is when, or in the early 90s when I was in college, I don't even think back then it was quite that, it had gotten quite as bad as it is now.
Don't get me wrong. I want to make it very clear. I don't have a problem with gays and lesbians and bisexuals and things like that, okay? I don't even have a problem with someone who is genuinely transgender, who has known from the time they were small, but didn't go rushing out to mom and dad because it's not what you did necessarily. And mom and dad had more brains when five-year-old, you know, Tommy said, I want to be a girl. They had enough brains not to go, well, shit, let me just call up Dr. Kutchikoff and we're going to get it done. No, there were brains.
Dr. Kutchikoff. I have to write that one down.
I'm triggered because it's not that I don't like the LGBTQ LMNOP community. It's that I think the propaganda has gotten way out of hand and you have a lot of young folks who are very confused about what they want. Look, if you're a dude and you want to know what it feels like to take a cock in the ass, buy a dildo. If you like it, okay, maybe you've got some orientation. Pussy's never been your thing, okay, maybe not. Chicks, the same thing. If you lick a lot of puss, if that's the dinosaur you identify with, and you like girls, super. If you like them both, fantastic. But please, for the love of God, stop going to your parents at 5 years old and telling them you want to change sexes. Parents, stop letting your five-year-old run their sexuality. Because yesterday they wanted to be a horse or a spaceman. And today they want to change their gender. It's disgusting. Stop pushing the agenda on the youth that they need to change who they are. Let them figure out who the fuck they are first before you try to change it.
Yeah. It somewhat related to this. My, I don't know. My daughter apparently had an issue with the size of her breasts and something about doing breast reduction surgery. And my immediate thought was like, not until you're fucking 18 and you pay for it yourself. Because no, that's not something I don't believe in mutilating anybody for any reason. But you know, that's just, I don't know. Yeah. That's like I said, I think like what Bully said was saying about there's already been lawsuits apparently related to this. And yeah, they got, and the lawsuit was won. And yeah, they're generally recommending that you need to wait till you're at least 18. Right. I mean, before,
well,
you even,
I mean, here's the thing. You have to be 18 to smoke a cigarette if they haven't upped it to 21. Okay. You have to at least be 16 to get your license unless you have a farm exemption.
Yeah.
There's several things that are age restricted for a fucking reason. And yet a five-year-old can look at their parent and go, I want to have a sex change, or I want to go on hormones because I want to be a different gender. And there are medical professionals out there that are like, yep, let me take that case. And my son in the chat had a really good point. He said, five-year-olds don't even know what they want for dinner. How the fuck do they know what they want to be gender-wise? That's a good point.
Yeah. You know, okay. I think we've gone off on this enough. But I think I'm really happy because
Man, I am so glad that we are done with that.
Yeah. So I think it is time to mark the triumphant return of the Cavalcade of Stupidity by none other than Sir Rev Cybertrucker himself.
Woo!
Hi-de-ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. Coming out of Boston and led by the barefoot, high-energy frontman Adam Ezra, the Adam Ezra Group has spent two decades redefining what it means to be an independent artist. Winning Americana Act of the Year at the New England Music Awards in 2023, they've built the massive grassroots following by treating every dive bar and sold-out theater like it's their last show. They've shared stages with legends like the Wallflowers and Gavin DeGraw, and even collaborated with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer John Oates. With a sound that blends the intimacy of folk with the raw power of a Springsteen-style rock show, this is the Adam Ezra Group with The Devil Came Up to Boston.
Boston, he was looking for some balls to break. He just got in from Quincy, where he'd rained out a lobster bake. At the Copley Tea, he saw a kid sawing on a fiddle and smoking a butt. The devil jumped up on a globe dispenser, said, dude, let me tell you what. I bet you didn't know it, kid, but I can fucking strum. You may think you're all hot shit, but you're just a fucking bum. I've rocked all the hot spots from the garden to the wang. I'll bet a lotto card and a pack of mobs that you can't fucking hang. The kid said, my name's Sully, and you're a stupid fuck. But if you want a party, I'm game to enter back. Sully, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hot. Shit's going down in Boston and the devil deals the cards. And you could win a lotto card and pack a marble rose. But if you lose, the devil gets your soul. The devil opened up his case and said, I'll fucking start. Fire shot from his fingertips. Damn, that shit was hot. The screech across the strings, it got the subway cops all pissed. Then the Dropkick Murphys showed up and it sounded something like this.
They get the Dropkick Murphys reference.
I love the Dropkick Murphy reference.
All right, that's great. We'll play the full one in Studio 33, of course. All right, so with that, I think it's time for Tales from Rideshare question mark.
Yeah, nobody took that ride because I was lazy AF the last couple of weeks. I have not worked, and I am not sorry. I've needed that time to get my head right. But I think we'll talk that more in the Toast and Jam.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun, and I'm having fun. And I know you know I got no special plans.
Special plans.
You know, yeah, we don't have any. We've been kind of hunkering down here because, yeah, it's been fucking cold. We would love to hear your best snow story by calling or texting 253-237-3321. Or you can send us a sound file in the back channel. So you can do that as well. So in any case, yeah, honey, what if we, you know, we started the show late. What the hell are we cooking?
I'm making like actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's?
No Denny's involvement here. It's quite interesting because I decided to do a slow-cooked beef stew that apparently took way too long to prepare and get onto camera, if you will. So we ended up having to do a little later start. But I decided to phone in the last part of the recipe and set my oven to shut itself off so that we would be able to continue doing the show without me having to take a pause and run downstairs out of breath to stir it or do whatever. But I do know that I added a little extra beef juice to it from the freezer that was already seasoned from a previous roast that I made. And I'm positive by the time we spoon it into dishes, it's absolutely going to be.
It's like an orgy in my mouth and everybody's coming.
Oh, it's an orgy. Got it.
Oh yeah, we also produced the video for the garlic rub steak we had 2 weeks ago. Yeah, that video is on YouTube. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. Okay, now we have to talk about. I'm gonna say the heading in this. This is like putting the microwave in the oven, right?
Oh shit! Yeah.
Yeah. This is
no,
great.
No. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. So this is the gravy and the cornstarch. So now you're going to have to, I'm going to have to refresh my memory as to exactly what this was.
We were in the green room. No, I know exactly what it was. We were in the green room, and my son was talking about having masturbating cattle, lovingly known as beef stroganoff, for dinner. And we were talking about the gravy. How, you know, you and I used to love eating stroganoff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, of course.
And I was talking about the gravy that you buy, because I would buy the beef au jus, the mushroom, and the regular beef, all from, I think, like Heinz or something.
Yes, exactly.
And I was talking about how much cornstarch must be in that gravy. And because I was slightly greened, it came out all of that gravy in the cornstarch.
Yes, of course. So, yeah. So it's another thing it's like the microwave in the oven, you know, comment.
Yes, it's much like from Christmas when I was highly intoxicated and decided we needed to put the microwave in the oven instead of the fact we needed to time the oven contents on the microwave timer. Yes, all know.
Exactly. So, all right. So something I have recently started doing because, I've been having kind of persistent, we'll call it just snot. and I've realized that I've been trying to sort of deal with it. Today I woke up with, you know, again, my allergies being what they've been. But I've also started taking, I discovered that maybe some ginger tea might actually help with some of the stuff. And it actually is, I kind of like it. It's a little bit too strong for you because without like sugar, without like a, you know.
Dude, even with some honey, that ginger is a touch aggressive.
Yeah. And actually the new, the stuff that came in from Amazon today. I looked at that and went, well, that's a little more aggressive than the other couple that I've had, but I've done a few different varieties of it, but overall it seems to have helped. Especially after consuming certain things, it actually helps me from not being not having issues. Although last night I don't think it completely helped because I probably didn't do it right before I went to bed. So it's something that, you know, it seems to help with my congestion. It's also kind of helped keep things it's helped with some of that. And like I've had it persistently for a while now, and I don't know exactly what it is. And I'm not taking Pharma or anything like that. Yeah, when I wake up in the morning and I'm having to, you know, when there's lots of snot coming out, you know, that's usually what I'm trying to avoid. So, so anyway, that seems to help with that. As long as I mean, I do it several times a day, and in fact, I've even got tea bags up here to go make some. Honestly, so
yeah, I'm if I want lemon in my tea, I'll add a little bit of lemon juice. I'm not with that whole flavoring thing and. Ginger has its place, but it is not in my tea, sadly.
Yeah, well, it is good. Yeah, I'm probably more habituated to having ginger because my mom used to make shoyu chicken, which is something that they make in Hawaii. You basically marinate the chicken in soy sauce and ginger, and yeah.
I'm sure an application like that could stand up to, you know, and flavor nicely the meat. I just don't prefer the strength of the ginger in a tea. I'll stick with my chai, thanks.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So let's talk about your internship.
Well, okay. People have heard me gnashing my teeth and stomping my feet recently about the fact I have to do this internship. And it was supposed to start Friday, which would have been yesterday. But it got postponed a week for parking and I can't say that I'm shedding a tear over that fact because I'm just not all that excited about doing this internship. I've been trying to figure out for weeks now and from every different angle why it just doesn't excite me. And I'm still trying to figure it out, even though I'm kind of going through the motions of I know I have to do it in order to get my degree. It just doesn't mean I have to like it. And I think I even talked about it last night while we were doing Rideshare Radio. Even though we were supposed to be doing 2.5 bends, not throwing any shade or anything like that. But no, seriously, I think I talked about it last night that I honestly just, I'm the wrong person probably to be in this industry and definitely to have to be doing an internship at a major university because I'm the most and can be the most closed down person. not looking to make friends or influence people. You're not going to be able to social engineer me because of the fact that you're not going to get any information about me other than observational, and I can't stop you from following me to the parking garage if you two are in my class, but just know that I don't have anything on my car that's going to indicate to you that I do or don't have children. Okay, you might see my stickers on the back of my headrest for the show that I do, but there's a couple of things that you don't know, like you don't know my moniker, unless you put two and two together and think, oh, she has a phoenix tattoo on her arm. She must be having you as a moniker. Like, I'm just the wrong person to try to social engineer. And among that, I don't want to talk to people. So working in a group setting is going to be really difficult for me. And I'm just not excited. Like, there's not a lot to this other than for the next probably like 3 or 4 months. Yeah, a little under, I think, 3 months. I'm going to be subjected to doing this. And there's nothing I can do about it. It's something I have to do for my grade.
To get your degree. I mean, it's a requirement.
I said grade. I meant degree. Yeah. To get my degree, it is required. And sadly, I think it's a shit requirement. It's a state requirement. So I don't understand why we're forcing an internship on students for a degree, but I digress. I'm not going to fight that battle right now. But maybe I'll, hopefully I'll learn something from it. Hopefully it will turn out to be a positive experience. I'm just not overly optimistic. I'm extremely, I don't want to say I'm scared, but I'm definitely not comfortable, I think is the best way to describe it. And it's on a Friday. Like, that's grinding the crap out of my gears. Is that I've got to spend half my day on a Friday in this environment. Ugh.
Yeah, well, we'll get through it. And, it may not be as bad as you think it is when you actually get there, but I understand, yeah, the whole, the getting up when we have to get up, you have to get up to...
The getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning, having to park in a parking garage... having to be somewhere I don't want to be. Yeah. None of this sounds fun.
No. I'll tell you what. Let's talk about the we've actually, I don't know, we've been doing YouTube shorts, both of us actually.
Because we do the video. Yeah, I've been doing the cooking videos, and I figure, well, I can take a few select pictures and turn them into a short just for funsies.
Yeah. So, So you posted the. I'll put a link in the chat, and of course, it'll be if you're not listening live, it'll be in the show notes. But this is the video you did of the pizza, right? And I think I posted it on the massive dong, right? So
you might have.
Yeah, and it you said it got like 2,300 views, and we didn't even I don't even think we advertised it, but it's weird. Like,
it had over 300 within 30 minutes of being posted. It was absolutely insane, and it's up to 2.3K.
Yeah, which is actually what my video
is.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah, which I did because I did a philosophical one about change your future, change your focus, change your world. And so this is or something along those lines. And that, again, I didn't really advertise that, and I even posted it natively to a few platforms. And yeah, it had 2,300 views pretty quickly. Again, no real advertisement of it. I did do one. Okay, so let me put that one in the chat here. And then I did another one. I did another one here that I did on data sovereignty, right? And this is a concept that this actually kind of came up as we were talking about the about your internship, right? And the idea is that because one of the I get this question all the time. What do people how do I protect myself online? Well, the biggest thing you can do, because once you give your data to anybody, you can't give it to anybody else, right? Or you can give it to anybody else. The problem is you can't control who does what with that data, right? If it's in another computer system, yeah, you've lost control of it at that point. And of course, data is infinitely copyable and all that. But the idea, the only thing you can really do to protect yourself, because once it's in the system, it's just going to get infinitely copied or whatever. But yeah, if you don't want to keep your attack surface low, yeah, maybe stop giving up your data to people that don't need it. We talk about, it's like, okay, do they really need this data? Do they really need any of this? And is it, is it above, is it out of the ordinary even, right? But of course, out of the ordinary these days. I think the data collection practices that are, and I kind of see this in my day job is that, yeah, even with GDPR, right? I mean, that doesn't really, yeah, I see we kind of have to do some things. We do maybe do a couple things differently, but at the same time, GDPR is no guarantee because you're asking the government, or you're basically like, what's a citizen going to do if their data was compromised? You know, yeah, they can petition the court, and we know how well that all fucking works. So, and most people aren't probably going to go through that trouble anyway, which is why, yeah, the fact that there's penalties on this shit, yeah, I don't see that they do any good because nobody's actually, you know, because, yeah, you have to go through the actual trouble of like, you know, suing somebody under those rules and get them. And it's like, well, yeah, how many people are going to go through that? You're not. Just to watch a fucking video on, I don't know, or, you know, I don't know, see a post on, you know, Twitter or something like that. No, you know, this is not the kind of thing. It's like, you know, when you sign up for another site, it's just another place your information is there. I mean, you may not be sharing a whole lot of, you know, stuff there, but do you need to have an account there? Really? I mean, seriously, like this is. So I'm kind of, it's like Sir Bemrose in JavaScript, right? It's like, yeah, if you want to keep your data off, don't fucking give it to people. You know, you don't want your data going, you know, places you don't want it to go. Quit giving it out. I mean, real simple. But I did something a lot nicer and simpler back then. But we're in the video. So anyway, that's about our little shorts that we did on YouTube. Now this happened yesterday. We got one more. And this, you're not going to believe this. So Phoenix is driving across the mountain to the other side and doing what she was doing over there. I looked at the notifications on my phone and I saw that there were some charges from Amazon.co.jp. Now that's Amazon in Japan, and so yeah, I won't even tell you what I spend a month on Amazon between the two of us. I'm sure it's insane, but
it's obscene. That's the point.
Yeah, that. but I can assure you that $0 go to Amazon.co.jp. And this was like it was like 23, but you know, I don't know, it was whatever. So I called up my credit card company.
I don't even know if it was 20 worth.
Yeah. It wasn't that much. But I called my credit card company and said, "Hey, yeah. I don't even do this." Right. And this is like, yeah, no, this is not me. And I reached an AI this time. It's an Indian, not AI anyway. But the nice gentleman had basically said, "Oh, you know, I'm sorry, sir. Yeah, they basically said, okay, we're going to cancel this card and send you a new one." Okay, awesome. So. You know, not a big deal. This is I've had this happen a few times over the course of my life, and so okay, fine. Since I use that particular credit card to do auto pay on a lot of things, yeah, I'm gonna have to go through and probably make some phone. You know, might need to make some phone calls. Definitely need to change some credit card details, but I'm gonna have to wait till I actually get the card. So, but yeah, and then okay, so I tell you that, and I send you all of this, and we're like, you know, there was a conversation about anyway. We had that conversation, and then a couple hours later, I get a phone call from you.
Oh, yeah, because I was spending time with my oldest, and we had stopped at one of the candy shops over by where he lives that I frequent when I'm over on that side of the mountain because it's a great place. The guy that owns it and runs it or whatever, he's, you know, he calls me mommy. He knows me because both of my kids go there, and they've dragged me in and so on. Great guy. I should probably find out his name at some point. But the point being, so we go there. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to use my bank card, which I had locked the night before because I wanted to make a purchase and I didn't want it to be on, you know, PhoneBoy's tab. So I go into my app and I unlock my card. And less than 30 seconds later, I insert my card into the card reader and it immediately pops up suspected fraud. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Now, I'm literally across the street from a branch of my bank when this happens. It just happens that's where the candy store is. So I pay for my purchases, including the one I didn't want PhoneBoy to foot, but ultimately, you know, that'll be made right on the other end. So I go across the street to my bank and the woman's like, yeah, it's showing up as fraud. So you're going to have to call this number, and then we'll see what we can do about getting your card unlocked. I said, so hold up a second. I said, so let me get this straight. I have to call the fraud department. They will not let you talk to them. And then we can see what we can do about getting my card unlocked. I said, I've been through this before. When I call the fraud department, they're going to ask me if I've authorized a purchase. I'm going to say, yes, it wasn't fraud, and they're going to unlock my card. Where do you have anything else to do with this? Why am I wasting my time with you if you can't even help me? Grabbed my phone number for the fraud department, walked out. Call the fraud department. Fraud department goes, we have no record of any fraud alerts on your account. This says it's a member services hold. So, because they locked my card. Okay, great. So I call card services because I'm figuring member services and card services are the same. No. Card services says same thing. Yep, we can't do anything. We'll have to send you to fraud. I said fraud said it was member services. Oh, yeah, that's a different thing. So I call member services is the fucking main branch for my bank, a mile and a half from where I'm sitting at best. So now we're going on to about 20 fucking minutes of playing ring around the fucking rosy. Get a hold of the member services division of my fucking credit union. The guy tells me, I can't see, but this other person can, but she's busy right now, so we're just going to have to wait for a minute. She finally frees up. He goes over. He comes back. He says, okay, I found out what's going on. I said, okay. In the meantime of which, we're waiting, and I said, do you not think that information, or I'm sorry, this was after he tells me that TLDR being that it was because when I unlocked my card, and this is what really sent me into a fit of just so angry. When I unlocked my card, my finger double tapped it and relocked it within a moment. And in the time it took for me to close my app, I never saw that it had relocked. So essentially, instead of, like my credit card, when you stick your plastic dick in the slot and you've locked your card like, you know, a responsible adult, or in my case, a fucking retard, because I didn't realize it relocked. There's a message that sends from your company that says, hey, your purchase was declined at such and such a place because your card is locked. No. When you have my faggot ass credit union, it says suspected fraud. Now, wait, guys, here gets the good part. Had I gone into my app and just simply known or checked, is this thing unlocked? I would have been able to unlock my card. There would not have been a block on it because it would have taken it off automatically. But wait, there's more. Now, we're up to 30 minutes when this guy finally gets me the answer as to why my card was blocked. I said, okay, so you're telling me you only have one person in that office who has access to this information? No, we have three, but one's on vacation and the other's at lunch. I'm like, okay, let me go a little further here. I said, here's the problem I have with your system. Your IT is shit, dude. I said, there is no reason in the world why a help desk level card services person should not be able to see a message that the reason there is a block on your card is because your card is locked. This is not fucking gold Fort Knox information. Any more that when on the app, the GUI for the bank, if you incorrectly input your username and password, oh, it has this big, instead of saying improper username and password, it has this big drawn out message about how you have to call customer service. No. Y'all, I insulted this man and he didn't even know it. Because he started talking to me about how, oh, well, you know, because, you know, this is just what credit card companies do. I said, no, sir, it's not. I said, because I've got two separate credit cards that alert me if I attempt to use my card and I've forgotten to unlock it. I said, your IT is weak and I wouldn't even be surprised if somebody's already gotten in your back door and has taken a look around and is still there. He didn't know what to say to that.
Yeah, he was, I will say, it was one of the most, Because you were on the phone with me and when this was going
yes,
on.
Yes, we were three-way.
Yeah, so I was listening to this, and actually the guy
it was a menage a banking circle jerk.
Exactly. Well, that might have to write that down. But anyway, actually the guy was very polite.
He was very polite. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, he did the best he could. And I'm kind of sitting there. Somebody who has has been done this for a long time. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I think he did the best he could. But this is the problem, right? Is that none of these systems are designed in such a way that it's just like
it is entirely time wasting for both the customer and the people who have to take these phone calls, because your system literally can't be set up for a simple message that invalid username and password. Transaction denied due to the fact your card was locked. This is not high-level security necessary, folks. These are simple messages for retards who, like me, occasionally double tap an app button. Or, fat finger their username or password. This bank is on my last fucking nerve, and they're jumping up and down like a troubled child on crack. I gotta tell you. So when that was finally all said and done, my card is fine, but I'm really considering finding another bank because this is getting out of hand. Usually you have places that have so little security that lateral movement is just as easy as gliding like a fucking ice skater at the Olympics. And then you have my credit union, whose asshole is tighter than frog pussy, okay, on things that it doesn't need to be. Underprivileged, overprivileged, who the fuck can tell anymore?
Well, yeah. And then you've got my credit union that wants the information about your marital status.
Oh my God. Yeah, there's that, overreach of information. Sorry.
It's marketing.
Access denied.
Let's say, marketing information. No, thank you. It's not required to do business. Well, if it is required for you to do business, then I won't do business with you. It's real simple. This is part of data sovereignty though, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so yeah, but I think I just found it really weird because I kind of went with the after all was said and done, I was just like, wow, what a coincidence that both of us had banking issues on the same day.
Coincidence? I think not.
Yeah,
that's pretty much what both of us were thinking. I don't exactly believe in coincidences and things of that nature.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but yeah, it was. I mean, not that yours was not as big a thing or anything.
No. Mine was a little more cut and dry. What was going on? Yours, yeah, it's like the IT of your bank and the IT of at least the credit card company I was using.
But
yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense to me, hon. Like I said before, I just can't get past the fact that this is a level of security that isn't necessary. If I'm able to phone in to you, verify my credentials,
or show up.
Yes.
With your ID.
I'm physically at a branch saying, hi, I'm me. That person in that office should be able to have the access to see something low level like, oh, did you just try to make a purchase and possibly your card was locked? Because at that point, much like if my son who's with me had looked at me and said, Mom, are you sure your card's unlocked? I may have argued with him, but I probably would have also gone into my fucking app and taken a look and gone, some bitch must have double tapped it. Seriously, there are several mediating things that could have occurred with this prior to me having to jump through 30 minutes and multiple phone call hoops. This was a massive failure on their part, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, we've complained about their IT before. So, all right, I think they're tight about hearing our balagan. I guess I might. This is something I didn't do because I forgot we had. Okay. All right. So we're gonna go to the tarot segment. Yeah. And yeah, I'm gonna have to produce a clip of that. So tonight, the deck I actually pulled tonight is actually I'll call it pre-insurrection tarot decks, right? So this is my Marseille tarot deck that I've been using for a long time to do reads, and so we'll see what the collective of you know, the people within the sound of my voice might be going on. You know, we'll see what cards we get. You know, I've been kind of shuffling here in the background while this is going on. Okay. Well, we have the Chariot in reverse, and the Chariot is usually a card that's, you know, this is the Yala energy, as I like to call it, right? That's when it's upright. Usually that means it's there was a read we did.
We referred to it as the LFG.
Yeah, the LFG read, right? This was one of the cards that was in that read, right? So. You know, things are kind of, it seems like things are kind of like may feel like that things are kind of like, I don't know, on pause or something like that, you know, or it seems like the energy might even be blocked a little bit, you know, with what you're, you know, you might get something that you're thinking about doing. And it feels like it's not the time. It's not, things aren't moving forward and you feel like they should be moving forward. But let's see what this other card is. Well, this is. Okay, so this is, I have to look this one up, because the problem with this particular tarot deck is the fact that the names are in like French or something. So this is the Pope or the Popess, and she's in reverse. The problem is, it seems like maybe even that there's that. Yeah, this is usually a lack of wisdom, a lack of a lack of piety, or maybe even false piety, right? And I think there's a lot of that seems to be being exposed lately. If you've been kind of, I've been, it's kind of funny doing a show. You actually have to, you know, we have to kind of pay attention to the news every now and again. And there's just been, I've been seeing a lot of, you know, the whole Epstein thing, for example. People are losing their mind. It even apparently affected one of the health guys I used to follow, a guy named Peter Attia. I mean, or at least I was listening to his podcast for a minute, but apparently, he corresponded with Epstein, and there was in the email tranche, and yeah. He'd just gotten hired by CBS News to do some bullshit, you know, and and the company he was like the market, you know, I don't know, something associated with as an executive or something. Yeah, they slowly backed away and said, yeah, he's no longer part of us, right? So it seems like, and I think this is kind of it seems like things are kind of like coming to a halt because everything that we're finding that we've, you know, all of the people that we thought were the people that we thought were in charge and knew what they were doing, maybe don't, and their false piety and false and liars and that kind of thing.
Well, I just wanted to also interject. I don't think that it's a coincidence that the Clintons, yeah, like they're not on his fucking list. Yeah, apparently they're testifying about this situation. So I don't think that's going to go very good.
Yeah, no, it's not. So, all right, I'm going to pull one more card here because this is where we're at here in terms of I usually only draw like three cards. I might do four if I get a card. Okay, we got the Hermit. This is who we've got. We got a lot. You know, it's kind of funny. I've been, you know, when I've been doing the draws on my own, I've been getting a lot of major arcana, and that's usually and I think this actually, as I'm sitting here looking at this read, we kind of talked about this last night, right? And this, the Hermit is, you know, is kind of the, you know, the wisdom from within, right? And this is, you have the little lantern that the guy has is actually, it's kind of shows the way, right? It feels like maybe you're kind of on your own and in the darkness, but you have the light, and you know where, you know what's true, and you know where you're going, right? And maybe you can't see that far ahead, but, you know, I think we're entering a world where it seems like our world's coming to an end because the truth is starting to come out, and that's causing things that we believe we rely on or put too much faith in. Well, they're changing as a result, I think it's important, you know, like, and I know most of the people that listen to this show have also listened to No Agenda, and so you know pretty much it's all fake and gay, right? I mean, this is the thing about it, and I think all of us here know that it's all fake and gay, right? And so while it's being exposed that it's really fake and gay, don't panic, folks, right? But you know, you're going to find, I think you'll find the answer sort of within, right? And this is where you'll see, you know, because, you know, this is a question that you've asked me many times. How do we know what's true out there with everything that, with all the...
Oh, yeah. Even as recently as probably last night, with all of the AI, the deep fake, the yada yada, I'm not going to go into it. This isn't 2.5 Bens. But truly, you can't believe anything that you don't necessarily see IRL in person. And even that, you still have to question at times.
Yeah. So this is where your own personal discernment, right, about what's true, what's not, and being honest with yourself about it, right, is key, right? And this is the, you know, I think I said, you know, I think we're entering the watching Rome burn moment of civilization. Popcorn.gif, honey, you know, because.
Oh, 100%. Even though we don't eat grain, like, yeah, we're definitely popcorn.gif.
Yeah, but I think it's important for us to do that have seen through the that have already started seeing through the matrix and realizing that all of this stuff is fake and gay. Yeah. I think the best thing we can do is just be, you know, is don't panic, right? But you'll figure. I think you'll see your way through it. You know, just I mean, you know, again, use your discernment, folks. That's really what this. That's kind of what I take out of these three cards that I drew, and it's been kind of in my, like to say, we talked about this kind of last night actually, when we were having a behind the mic conversation. But anyway. I'll have a link to the, I'll put a picture and all of this stuff in the show notes, but I think we're now to the weigh-in segment. What do you think?
I think it's possible that
the world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
253-237-3321, like this pedalhead did. We got a text.
Mama T says, I don't have any particular best snow day. I do remember, I don't know how many years ago, but it's been since I've been back. My little family down the hill got outside and played in the snow and made snow cream. I made snow cream too, but I wasn't getting out in that white, wet stuff. Yeah, I don't play. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that ever had any appeal to me, but I maybe I played with my kids and such. But all right. I'm going to play. So we actually got this. This actually came in as an audio file from Bemlet.
So the question today is best snow day ever, and I gotta say, I got a couple answers here. I mean, like, ever, man, that's hard to say. Like some of the ski trips I've taken in the up in Canada and have been really amazing. Standout though was the day we blew up a snowman with an M80. That was pretty epic. But really, on a more recent level, I'm going to say that the best snow day ever is something I do every single year. And that's every year on January 1st, on New Year's, I take the whole family, all four of us, the girls, me and the wife, we all go up into the mountains somewhere and go find snow. It doesn't matter how far up we got to go. We go find snow, and we let the girls play in the snow, and we throw snowballs at each other, build snowmen. We sled if we remembered to bring something. Heck, we sled if we don't, and just ride down snow chutes on pants. I don't care. But we just have a good day of 3-4 hours in the snow, and then we jump back in the car and listen to the kids whine for 2 hours as we drive home. It is an incredible thing we do. The kids look forward to it now that they're old enough to remember. Probably the best snow day that I, at this point in my life, could possibly have.
All right. Well, thank you, Ben. That was a good one here. I don't know. Maybe I'll give my, I'm trying to think my best snow day. Well, honestly, it's going to sound really weird because, yeah, the kids, I don't know. Because I didn't grow up in snow, right? I mean, I had, you know, the most I got to see with snow was like, you know, my mom trying to drive on Empire Grade going back down to Boulder Creek in the, during when the weather was really bad in her little VW Bug. That was not fun. So, you know, I don't know that I'm trying to think if I had any personal fun. I think honestly, the best was actually like fucking shoveling the mammoth driveway at in Wisteria Lane. You know why? Because nobody bugged me, and it was good exercise. So, I think that. But I. Yeah, of course. Also, that there was the flight from Hoth. I mean, SeaTac, where the snow was so bad that the plane almost timed out trying to get out to trying to be able to take off because they didn't have enough equipment to handle the fact that it was snowing really, you know, anyway, and cold and shit like that. So, yeah, I don't really have any good snow memories. So we got one more voicemail though. And we got voicemail here, and we can play that. I think this will be much more fun than that story.
Howdy, 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 Phoenix and Funboy. It's a Saturday. It's date day. Wife and I are just undoing the planning, and we're just staying local. Trying to just go to stuff we can walk to, actually. She doesn't know that yet, though. Anyway, greatest or whatever snow story. Not a lot of snow growing up. But I'm actually going to go off somebody else's, a story that I recently heard. And like a family or something, they were from like another country. And then they got to see the snow, and it's just like the snow that's like where it's barely just like snow on the side of the road kind of thing, where it's, and all the trucks had gone through it and whatnot. So it's just kind of like dirty brown snow where it doesn't really look like snow sort of thing. But this family, like from another country, had never experienced snow. And that was like the greatest thing to them. And, yeah, it's just this story that I heard the other weekend just stood out as far as like, you know, yeah, if you go a little farther, there's, you know, all this, you know, like snow parks and stuff like that and whatnot. But, they were just like, just hearing this, and it was just like, just so enamored with the thing. And it was just one of those, like the things you take for granted in life. And sometimes just getting to experience a little bit of something you never have and whatnot. So anyway. It's a story about somebody else, but yeah. But yeah, I remember we did like a little snow parks kind of thing. We just pull off on the side of the road and go play around. One time we rented a place when I was a kid and whatnot. And, the people prior had like created a little sled run. You could get out yourself like a little plastic washer or your plastic like saucer, snow saucer or whatever and go down it. That was cool. They had made some like jumps and stuff like that. So. I remember that being memorable. But, yeah. Anyway. All right. Love you guys. Stay dangerous. Whether or not you're cooking the sausage or you're eating the sausage, go ahead and give a hearty, hearty.
Thank you, Christopher Battles. We appreciate your, thank you for your courage and such. Okay. So, do you have a snow story?
I mean, it's not necessarily a snow story. Obviously, growing up in New England, I've seen more than my fair share and everybody else's fair share of snow. I mean, there's just a few things. And sadly, we didn't get a chance to do it when it was snowing so far this year. Not that I want any more snow to be able to do it, but just sitting and listening to it snow, I've always enjoyed the sound of listening to it snow. Taking my four-wheel drive out and going in an empty parking lot and just blowing it around for no good reason other than because I could. That's pretty much, you know, the norm. Making snowmen with my kiddos and having snowball fights and stuff like that. Just, you know, run-of-the-mill stuff. Nothing necessarily. I don't have any, you know, Bemrose level stories, we'll say.
Neither do I.
It's funny though, because I actually have in the back channel, I was sent by Mrs. Bemlett the pictures from the day they went out and found snow this past year. I think it was in 2025. I don't think it was the beginning of the year that they did. I can't remember exactly. I'd have to look at my messages. But yeah, I got pictures from that day. Lovely, wonderful family. We love them bunches. And I'm glad they found snow. Good fun. Yeah. But, you know, I think it's probably time to get into the second half of this shit show. And, of course, the second half is never.
Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Why do you keep saying that?
Because they pay me every time I do. It's a really good way to make money.
Yeah, I like money, though. But, all right, this is, I believe this is your story.
It probably is, and you know me. When it comes to sin, you can assure my name is going to be somewhere near it, but not in this capacity, because the seven deadly sins of weight loss, drugs, yeah, you're never going to hear me talk about those, except for today.
Drugs? I'm not taking any drugs.
So back in 2005, the book Selling Sickness, How the World's Biggest Pharmaceutical Companies Are Turning Us All Into Patients, laid bare the playbook. Drug companies, with their legions of PR flocks, paid experts, funded patient groups, and compliance media, systematically widen the boundaries of illness to expand their markets. Now, I can tell you that Phoneboy and I ordered the hardcover of that very book, and we intend to read it because it sounds awesome, and it's right on track with what we talk about here, that the pharmaceutical companies are not trying to heal you, cure you, or otherwise, because there is not medicine in the cure as we know. So high cholesterol, shyness, mild bone thinning, restlessness, all rebranded as chronic widespread conditions, burnished with a patina of respectable medical terminology and paving the way for a lifelong diet of pills. And that's the way the model works. You see, cures are passe. Cures kill markets. Getting the population properly hooked on a pharmaceutical treatment for a chronic condition is where the serious money is. The core insight was simple and grim. It's far easier and infinitely more profitable to convince healthy people that they're sick than to develop genuine cures for the truly ill. Yeah, this story is really dark. 20 years later, the hustle is bigger, slicker, and more dangerous than ever. The world's current fixation on GLP-1s is possibly the most egregious disease-mongering exercise humankind has yet seen, representing moral sin on a massive scale. Now that made me think that the seven deadly sins, also known as the capital vices or cardinal sins, are a useful lens to examine the phenomenon. They are deadly because they are believed to be the root causes of other sins and moral corruption. They include pride, vanity, or hubris. Probably the mother of all sins, pride is an extensive belief in one's own abilities, qualities, or self-importance, without regard for others. Pharma and the experts they employ are arrogantly rewriting medical reality, pushing obesity as an inevitable chronic relapse disease driven by faulty hormones and genetics. The self-deception is in downplaying the centrality of behavioral solutions to weight loss and positioning the GLP-1s as revolutionary miracles is hubris at its height. Pride goes before the fall, and in this case, this superior biomedical fix eclipses and denounces humbler societal solutions. Greed, avarice, or covetousness?
Covetousness, to covet, you know.
Ah, that's right, covetousness. I had that earlier and then I mispronounced it. Mabi. So the amount of money in this class of drugs is truly mind-boggling because the size of the patient population is so large. One media commentator in Canada said that 50%, let that sink in, folks, 50% of the population should be on a GLP-1. What? Are you kidding? That's disgusting.
Yeah, I'm sure, and I'm sure that the drug companies, you know, who are paying that commentator are quite happy that he said that.
Oh, I'm sure they are. Okay. Now, given the grossly inflated prices of these products, the enormous revenue stream pouring in is being used to buy whatever is needed. The doctors, the media, the scientists, the pundits, the consumer advocates, and the governments and insurers who are being pushed relentlessly to pay for all this madness. The greed feeds an ecosystem for supporting and expanding markets beyond reason and common sense, silencing critics and monopolizing the narrative. Wrath or anger. The class action lawsuits over the more obvious adverse effects such as stomach paralysis, vision loss, and psychiatric effects are gaining steam, but this is just the tip of the iceberg. As more of the unknown unknowns come to light, manufacturers will tout out the usual plausible deniability arguments. Billions are being set aside to fight the inevitable lawsuits coming as mainstream and medical media are suppressing any criticism of the medicalization of obesity with that tired trope of science denier plastered on anyone questioning the wisdom of these drugs or their safety for that matter. So indeed, there's plenty of anger to go around. Then we have envy, the human proclivity to covet or desire what others have, traits, success, possessions. It makes envy a key marketing tool, stoked by the likes of Oprah Winfrey, Elon Musk, and other so-called influencers, those celebrities who flaunt their dramatic drug-induced transformations make the rest of the world envy their Ozempic body and build resentment toward those who are blocking access to the drugs. All of this, of course, drives off-label use, black markets, and inequity, where it seems that only the rich can access the perfect thinness. With the drugs soon to be available generically, the price is dropping dramatically, and soon price alone will not be a barrier to anyone who's envious enough. Lust, an intense or unbridled desire for pleasure, can extend to sex, power, or indulgence. Here, the lust is for instant gratification, the dominant quick-fix allure of most drug marketing, where effortless thinness can be found, apparently, without deprivation. What most people need is a body size that, for them, is healthy and sustainable. The Ozempic body is the opposite of that, rewarding lust for instant gratification over sustainable health. Still tempted? Google Ozempic face and read about a future of gaunt, aged facial appearance featuring sunken cheeks, hollow eyes, sagging skin, and wrinkles. Oh, but don't worry. The drug industry is good at producing drugs to treat the harms produced by the ones they're already selling.
Well, you know, there's also the plastic surgeons, you know, and some of these people probably already play with plastic surgery. So, yeah, I just, you know. Go ahead.
Go ahead, because I have a thought on this.
No, you go ahead. I lost mine, so.
Okay, what I want to say is, as someone who started out at almost 350 pounds, arguably, and who's dropped over 100 pounds at one point before slightly rebounding, okay? I remember seeing my face become slightly sunken. Not sagging, well, a little sagging skin around my midsection, okay? Wrinkles comes with the sagging skin. The hollow eyes comes with the, you know, the loss of facial fat. That, I didn't have all of that necessarily, okay? But when you're able to lose a good amount of weight because you're eating right and you're exercising, yeah, you can still kind of get some of those side effects with doing it the natural way, but you're not going to get the gut paralysis. You're not going to get the awful side effects of either not being able to eat, or again, this still comes back to, as it was said earlier, this is about the fact that I want to be able to eat whatever I want to be able to eat. I don't want to have to give up anything. All I got to do, inject this Gila monster venom into my body and ta-da, I'm going to be as thin as Oprah, or I'm going to look as good as Elon. But the only problem is you're going to be dead. That's why you're going to look
you're
that
dead,
good.
Asshole.
Because you're dead, asshole.
Yeah, and by the way, because if you're taking these drugs, you might be, I don't know. I'm not sure how, well, let's see. Some people, quit the Gila monster venom and quit the Gila monster venom. There we go. Let's say that correctly. And yeah, then they become gluttons, right?
Yes, I would agree, because gluttony is the next sin. And if you think gluttony has gotten us into a mess and reversing it is the only way out, I don't think that's fully true. If we have a nation full of overweight people, which we kind of do right now, then why do we persist with accepting a society engineered for inactivity? Most of us drive, sit, or lounge through our waking hours, consuming cheap, nutritionless, calorie-heavy food, and are we're otherwise unable to eat or exercise our way to a more appealing body. Again, you can't out-exercise a bad diet. I don't care if you're running 10 miles a day. If you're still consuming all of those calorie-heavy nutrition-less foods, you're not going to get that body. You might lose a little bit of weight, but you know what's going to happen after a while? All that shit food that you're consuming, those grains, those seed oils, it's going to start really attacking your body. So you're not going to want to or be able to run as much as you did. Then the weight is going to start piling on.
Yeah. And it's kind of, and it's funny too, because, living poorly. Yeah. No matter what.
Yeah. Because there's not a drug that can fix the underlying disease of a poor lifestyle.
But Chris, what's going to be interesting is in years down the road, what things are going to be attributed to the Gila monster venom?
Oh, you can just see that there's going to be a ton of stuff that technically came from it, but we're not going to admit to it. It's going to be something else.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the last sin that we have is sloth or Acedia?
Acedia. I didn't look it up, but yeah.
So this might be the ultimate lazy shortcut. And I think I addressed this earlier. Why address root causes like the food system, activity, poverty, or cities not built for exercise when a weekly shot bypasses that effort? The marketing preys on what we all seem to want and feeds our aversion to hard work. Promoting drugs as the easy path while discouraging lifestyle changes as insufficient is a type of societal sloth. We can do better, folks. These sins aren't accidental. They're baked into a system that profits from myth-making and the hustle endures. Time to reject the seduction and demand real solutions. Retake your agency. So tell a man his fate is genetic and you've accomplished something powerful. You've located the problem somewhere he can't reach. You've moved his agency. You've made him dependent on a system that will manage his inevitable decline rather than addressing the factors actually killing him. You've created a customer. Exactly what the drunk companies have been doing for decades.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, you know, this was an article I pulled out of Zero Hedge and it's just, I kind of saw this and I'm like, yeah, the entire medical system is really just set up to, we've known this for a long time.
The food system causes you to have to take the pills. And as I'm always saying, have you ever wondered why grandma has a gallon sized bag of pills? It's because 30, 40, 50 years ago, she went to the doctor and said, hey, doc, I got a pain in my shoulder. Oh, well, here's a pill. Okay, well, the pain in my shoulder is gone, but now I got this. Oh, here's another pill. And before you know it, on and on we go. Grandma has a gallon of pills, no clue what half of them are for, probably doesn't need most of them, but I can guarantee you a large fraction of them are probably directly caused by the broken food system that continues to pump grains, seed oils, soy, sugar, and other things that your body cannot handle in the massive quantities that they are being pumped into it, all while shaking your hand and sticking the knife in your back.
Yeah, none of this is a surprise to anybody that's probably listening to this because this seems like what it's always been about. And and of course, you know, that's another one of these things these drug companies do. It seems like with their ads, it's like, you know, they mentioned some like obscure disease that I've never heard of. And it's like, you know, most people hear that and they go, wow, do I have XYZ? Maybe I should talk to my doctor so I can take this drug.
And worse. Okay. And you and I encountered this. So we're not going to have a shitting on AI moment, but we are. Worse is the fact that they see this drug commercial and then they go, oh my God, I have those symptoms. So they go on their little computer and they start clicking away going, WebMD, And then what's the first thing, phone boy, on most every search that you do that pops up?
AI.
Bingo. And what happens? Most people don't read past the AI. They just go, oh, this is a simple answer. Ta-da! And as we found out, and my oldest son found out, AI claimed that an AMD was compatible with an Intel when it clearly fucking was not.
Yes, exactly.
Rant over.
Yeah, exactly. It was, especially when, yeah, somebody who's actually has been doing this, well, longer than he's been alive, said, yeah, that doesn't work, dude. Yeah, that's not compatible, I can assure you. I didn't even need to read the manual, but yeah, it's like, well, he pulled up the spec sheet, and yeah, it's an Intel something something. Yeah, okay, you can't put an AMD processor. It doesn't work that way. But, all right, we'll talk, all right. Let's talk about fear.
Shall we?
Yes. Why does your brain react to fear? And how do you fix it?
Fear is freedom. Subjugation is liberation. Contradiction is truth. Those are the facts of this world. And you will all surrender to them. You pigs in human clothing!
All right. We've all been there. That jolt of panic before a job interview. The knot in your stomach. While public speaking, the dread during a difficult conversation. Your heart pounds, your breath turns shallow, and your palms sweat. Your body reacts as if physical danger is imminent, even when it's not. Now, this surge of anxiety stems from your brain's fight or flight response. It is designed to protect us from threats, but modern life sets it off every time we get stuck in traffic or think our coworker is upset with us. When activated repeatedly, it can fuel high blood pressure, weakened immunity, anxiety disorders, and burnout. You know, honey, that sounds like with all the fear porn that they're trying to keep us all sick.
Of course. Didn't you figure that out earlier?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. We're getting that fight or flight. We're getting that fight or flight response properly tuned requires a counterintuitive solution. Now, neuroscientists suggest that we need to expose ourselves to what unsettles us. If your collective mental health is any indicator, people are struggling, according to the research from Moodle, which I have no idea who that is, conducted by CensusWide, yet another company I've never heard of, approximately 284 million people, or about 3.5% of the world's total population, have an anxiety disorder, while 66% of the American employees report experiencing burnout. Yeah, have you tried to work in the bullshit these days? Yeah, let's not. Anyway, they're not separate problems. They're symptoms of brain stuck in perpetual threat mode, unable to distinguish between psychological discomfort and physical danger. At the center of our fear response is the amygdala. Don't have a swollen amygdala, folks. Sir Chris Wilson said that a long time ago. And it's an almond-sized structure deep in the brain responsible for detecting threats and triggering rapid emotional reactions. However, it can be trained to calm down. How can something the size of an almond cause so much trouble? Well, because its job lies at the heart of human experience. The amygdala is the region of the brain associated with emotional processing, and it constantly scans for threats like a smoke detector ready to sound the alarm. And yeah, there's and again, that's getting fed by the you know, the stuff that you see in the social medias and on the TVs. Under normal circumstances, the logical prefrontal cortex runs the show, handling executive function and rational decision-making. However, when the amygdala senses danger, it hijacks this system entirely. When this protective system becomes hypersensitive, it can trick the brain into perceiving threats where none exist. The amygdala doesn't distinguish between real-time danger and imagined scenarios. Yeah, that's important thing right there, and that's because that's where a lot of our fear comes from is our imagination sometimes, right? It's
well, and I was recently reading something about the doom. I think it was in one of the articles we did on doom scrolling. How, you know, when you're flooded with constant news and, you know, bad shit on social media and this and that and the other thing, it's another reason why, like, doom scrolling at night, you know, keeps you from sleeping, because your brain can't process that, you know, it can't differentiate and distinguish. So your brain is constantly being kept in a state of fight or flight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it doesn't take much. I mean, it can be activated by memory, sensory cues, or doom scrolling, or hypothetical fear, such as standing near the edge of a high balcony, even if you've never fallen. However, an expert said, once you know how the amygdala works, you can stop being afraid of your own reactions. And once you're not afraid of the reaction itself, you can learn how to slow it down. And that's something I've been kind of with my own emotions and over the last little while. That's something I've just kind of gotten to a point where I can have the emotion, but I don't let it overtake me. I can observe it and feel it, but not take it on. Right. And I think that's that's kind of one of the ways to get to key to sort of, you know, getting past fear. Sometimes is being able to sort of, you know, again, not take it on, right? You can have the fear response, but yeah, it doesn't drive you, right? It's a thing here. So now The brain is capable of change throughout life, a quality known as neuroplasticity. One study shows that an effective way to retrain fear circuits is through gradual controlled exposure to anxiety-provoking situations. Patience is key, however, and it's a process that requires repetition and can take months to master. Now, rewiring the brain is best approached in small, manageable steps, according to yet another expert. The amygdala learns from direct experience while the prefrontal cortex learns from interpretation. Essentially, repeated tolerable exposures help the brain form new associations, shifting from threat to safety. Over time, the prefrontal cortex becomes quicker and more automatic in calming the amygdala. You know, another thing too, right? It's actually, and I think this actually, the article says this again. Another thing you can do is just take a deep breath, right? Don't just immediately react from fear, but take a deep breath and feel your breath, and you know, take a couple of, you know, and realize that, yeah, that doesn't define you, right? But yeah, there may be something there, and the fear is telling you something. But don't be afraid of the fear. That's, I think, what it comes down to. But so fear responses shift most effectively when several conditions are present. First of all, if it's predictable, so you kind of know what to expect. A sense of control, meaning you choose to engage rather than being forced to, right? So and then repeated practice, which allows the brain to learn through experience. Now, resilience is not the absence of fear. I've said this before, right? You don't get less afraid, but you get more brave, right? That's kind of what resilience.
No, actually, you have it backwards. You said,
you don't get less afraid, but you get more brave. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Yeah, fear is an adaptive part of how we stay safe, and resilience comes from recalibrating the fear system so it responds proportionally. Small, consistent steps toward feared situations help people feel capable again, and that sense is often what truly changes lives. So, to counter chronic stress, experts advise building simple, consistent habits that signal safety to the nervous system, including slow, steady breathing, a brief grounding pauses, mindful movement, limiting news and social media consumption. That's the biggest thing you can do. And also go see some people in real life, you know, which I think is, yeah, I mean, I do all of these things all the time, right? I try to, if I'm going to reconnect with somebody, if I can do it in real life, that's much better. And I certainly don't spend a lot of time on news and social media. And I do a lot of, I'm trying to be more, or I should say, I'm being more mindful, and I've got work to do in that regard. But I'm working. You know, this is one of the things, being more present, right? And that means in the here and now, and not the stuff that's going on somewhere else, for reasons that we can debate to the end of the earth, right? My life right now is pretty good, and a lot of it comes down to changing my focus, right? The things I pay attention to, and again doing it on not mindless consumption, right? Mindless doom scrolling. Be mindful of what you do. Sometimes less is more, right? And unfortunately, the world has a lot of distractions. If you want to consume them, just don't. You know, and then we won't have issues with requiring two-factor authentication on chat services or something like that. I don't know what.
Oh, it's so ridiculous.
Whatever's going on in the chat right now.
Yeah,
about that.
Discord jerking off, as we know.
Yeah, well, it's owned by Amazon. Can you?
After the stupidity, we forgot to mention that shit in Toast and Jam. Let's go from Mount Juliet to Marvel.
Yeah.
P.S. We are located in between Mount Jew and Marvel. These mental midgets at Amazon decided, no. We're going to take your package and we're going to send it from Mount Jew to Marvel. Then we're going to let it travel the hour plus back to you, causing an extra day's delay in my delivery because you fucking people don't own a map.
That's right. Well, no, it's called La La Logistics.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
Yeah, since it has to go to the post office, you know, I don't know why.
No, the post office is even better because at least Nashville services our post office. And if it's in Nashville, we know the next day, yeah, it's going to be in our mailbox, not boinging from west to east to west. It reminds me of a flight pattern for hubs.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, let's talk about this. We've got one more story here.
We do. And I love this story because I think it's something we all can benefit from, which is using nature as therapy. So research shows how the outdoors can help us to heal.
I like fresh air, motherfucker.
Nature-based therapy may help people to find hope, meaning, and a deeper sense of connection, according to new research from the University of Manchester. The study, published in the journal Ecopsychology, examines a form of outdoor therapy called ecotherapy, which includes activities such as walking in woodland, spending time near water, gardening, or sitting quietly in nature with a trained therapist. How about we carve out the trained therapist part? Just sitting quiet in nature? Yeah, it'll work a lot better than paying $500 an hour for somebody to sit there with a notepad and a little wooden bench and go, "Now what do you feel? Can we talk about your mother?" So by reviewing studies from around the world, the researchers explored how people described their most meaningful moments during these experiences. Many people spoke about moments in nature that helped them process pain, let go of the past, and rediscover a sense of purpose. And I'm sure all of this was done without a therapist's intervention, but I digress. So rather than techniques or theories, participants described simple experiences. Watching trees grow. Wow, how long were they staring at that tree? Sorry. Watching trees grow and decay. So probably some time-lapse photographs there. I don't think they were doing this in real time. You're not going to sit on a bench in the woods for it, the length of time it takes to watch a tree grow or decay. I'm sorry, I just couldn't resist. Anyways. So they describe simple experiences like watching trees grow and decay, feeling the wind on their face, or sitting quietly in a forest and feeling a part of something larger. Some described nature as a mirror for their own lives. Seeing natural cycles of growth and renewal helped them accept difficult experiences and feel more present. I can say I think we've experienced that when we've been out on our walks in nature and whatnot.
Yeah, there's a reason. I like doing some of this, doing some of my videos outside and in nature where possible. Although lately it's been so cold, I haven't wanted to really go leave the house, much less go out of nature. But I think one of my problems I have with nature around here is there's still too many people around here.
True. So,
and it's the natures are like pockets of nature. I like going out, having 100 acres of land,
I can't wait.
That's the kind of nature I want. But anyway,
exactly. I don't want to be able to look in any direction and see a neighbor.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to see the splendor of nature. Yeah.
Exactly. I don't want my nature encroached upon. Others spoke about a strong sense of connection and belonging, which brought comfort and made personal problems feel more manageable. Now, I can relate to that because when we're, when we take the time to be quiet, even if it's not out in nature, just the time to kind of reflect, maybe take a, soak in a hot bath or just sit quietly in the center of the bed or something, you definitely can find comfort. And if you're trying to figure out, a problem that you're dealing with, it does help to kind of reflect silently. So most importantly, these experiences were not linked to religion. People from different backgrounds described spirituality in their own words, focusing on connection, awe, and meaning rather than belief. The study suggests that moments can have lasting effects, helping people accept themselves, release emotional pain, and find new direction. At a time of widespread anxiety about the future, the study highlights how connecting with nature may support mental health and foster hope. Ecotherapy doesn't replace traditional talking therapies, but the researchers say it may offer something different: space, perspective, and a reminder that people are part of a wider living world. I think that's very important. Now, they say many people told us that being in nature helped them see their lives differently. Simple moments like watching trees grow, decay, and renew gave them permission to accept change, pain, and uncertainty while feeling present and connected to something bigger. At a time when many people feel overwhelmed or anxious about the future, these experiences help people reconnect with hope and a sense of purpose. This research shows that therapy doesn't always have to happen in a room. For some people, being outdoors creates the space they need to reflect, heal, and move forward. As mental health services face growing demand, nature-based approaches could be a valuable part of a wider, more human or more humane response to well-being. Yeah, I'm all for cutting the therapists out and just going out into nature. I really am.
By yourself without your tech, maybe.
Yes, 100%. Shut your tech off. If you're out in nature, just be present and be with nature. Do not be distracted by your fondle slabs or whatever. One thing about this article that bugged the crap out of me, though, and I even highlighted it when we were talking about it, was the part where they talk about, you know, oh, going out in the forest with a trained therapist. No, absolutely, 1,000% no. Why do I need some overpaid Freud wannabe sitting in the forest with me? No.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, and this because it's important to be present. Actually, the thing is that nature has a certain energy to it. The earth has an energy, and you can connect with that energy. I mean, I went out the other night. This was actually just I think I went out. I forgot what it was, but it was. You had me go check something, whether the car was covered with snow or not, or ice or whatever. And I actually just went outside and I stood in the, granted it was in the parking lot here. And I just stood outside and I watched the moon. Right. And I could feel that energy. Right. So just being outside, right. Even, and it was relatively quiet. I mean, granted there wasn't a lot of nature around because of where we're at, but yeah, it was, but just getting outside sometimes and being by yourself and you can connect with those things. You're going to, and it's actually, it's nice just to get the peace and quiet, right? Because that's one of the problems with the modern world is it's so loud. There's so much attempt to distract. There's so much attempt to get you to look at me, right? I mean, that's what social media is. That's what marketing is. That's what a lot of these things is look at me, right? Well, that's okay, but you're part of a bigger system, right? And when I'm out in nature, right, I realize that there's so many things that there's infinite. Nature provides everything that you need. You just have to know how to use it, right? And know when to use it, right? And so we don't need to go buy things in a store. How do you think humans lived before civilization? They did what other animals did, right? And
not to call Sir Bemrose a Neanderthal or a troglodyte, but he does kind of live a little primitively. If you think about the fact, and I mean this with a lot of respect, okay? Mm-hmm. He and Dame Bemrose, they don't waste, okay? They understand the value of shit's expensive. They have a wood stove to offset the cost of trying to heat their house. Yeah. You know, it's not all about, I mean, he doesn't have a brand new shiny car. Hell, he absolutely hates new vehicles because of their rolling,
They're rolling smartphones.
Yeah, they're computers on wheels. So, in a sense, he's kind of a great role model to, if you want to know how not to have a bunch of shitification happen to you through technology, because you want to have a smartphone and a smart home and a smart car and a smart toothbrush and a smart this and a smart that, then quite frankly, you're not the person that should be listening to this or 2.5 Bens. But if you want to know not how to unplug, yeah, he's a great role model.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Bemlet in the chat says, being in nature is amazing. Nothing but the wife and I and maybe Dan. Some quiet conversation and lots of booze. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a great time. Yeah. Hopefully a nice bonfire too.
Yeah, I can tell you that there's been a couple times that I've experienced several bonfires on the beach in Santa Cruz. Both as a kid and even as an adult. I think one of my office parties one time, when we had an office down in, we had an office in Scotts Valley, they actually did a bonfire one night. And so that happened to be a week I was in town. So I went and it was, like I said, it's I like when we do, even when we go outside and just like burn wood in our smoker, right? That's why we have some wood that we can do just that with. And it's not, anyway, that's actually, I like just being out in that, you know, just listening to the fire, you know, all of that. I mean, any just being, so, you know, being able to be present and appreciate the beauty of it and seeing that, seeing the animals go around and, you know, and not, anyway, it's just, I can't tell you, this is one of the things I liked about, you know, when I used to run even in Wisteria Lane. Yeah. I ran several miles to places where there was forest so I could actually, go to them when I was doing the longer runs, but even with shorter runs, I'd sometimes go take a drive. And even though it was kind of someplace like here one of the places I went was right along the freeway. So you could hear the freeway traffic, but it's still nice to be in nature though, right? There's still something about it.
Yeah. Even as people-y as it can be around here, there is definitely something, and I've experienced it. I'm pretty sure you have as well. Is when we walk on the path that goes through and goes by the golf course, there's a point at which that you get away from the golf course and you're just kind of, yeah, there's a little bit of a road near there, but you're far away from, you know, you're far away enough from people and nature, or in nature and far enough away from people is what I'm trying to say, that you can experience that silence and that awe, especially, you remember the kind of steep trail you took me on that had that lake at like the bottom of it. We saw the pontoon boat or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's a place where if nobody else is on the trail and once you get to the top that's just, it is such a beautiful thing. There's really something to doing that. I love when we get that opportunity. It's very cathartic.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually it's one of the places I go. There's a few places. There's this area. They've actually made a lot of trails. Unfortunately, they're all very hilly. So
we're definitely going to get back once the weather gets warmer to taking, you know, treks along those trails, both to exercise and also, you know, to kind of rebalance our mind.
Yeah, being out in nature. Yeah, because you know you want to. This, yeah, I just can't tell you being, you know, this, yeah, being out in nature, you know, away from people. Yeah, it feels there's something about it. I mean, anyway, I think we all need to do that more, even just going outside for a few minutes. I mean, yeah, I did when I recorded my video, even just going out on our balcony here. I mean, it's, yeah, there's not much to see right now because because it's fucking February and it's been below freezing, so no, there's nothing growing right now, so it's, yeah, all the trees are bare around here, but yeah, it's still nice to be just even,
yeah, but I tell you, before you know it, phone boy, we're gonna have little green buds pop and there's gonna be that yellow shit all over everything, including in our house, and making us sneeze.
Yeah, but it is actually, yeah, and actually even like, yeah, there's, yeah, but we can find places around anyway. You can find moments of it, certainly. You know, there's even, anyway, but we're way over the rabbit hole here, and I think it's time for last call.
It is.
Oh, I'm not done yet.
Oh God.
Yeah, well, we don't have any final voicemails, but we do have something of mention, and that is the fact that it came across the wire recently that Catherine O'Hara had passed away, and we were really sad to hear about that. Of course, she was one of the main characters in Beetlejuice. She was
Kevin's mom in fucking Home Alone.
Home Alone, that's right. She was.
Yeah, and I mean, there were, yeah, a lot of people had some. You know, she was in SCTV, right? And one of her, and actually, yeah, that, and yeah, I think I'd like to tell the George Carlin story that we found.
Oh yeah, the Rick Moranis George Carlin.
Yeah,
yes, please do.
Yeah, that, yeah. So, all right. This, yeah. Again, see it on social media. You know, don't know how true it is, but it is, sounds like the kind of thing that makes I can believe it, basically. So Rick Moranis years ago did he did an imitation of George Carlin where he looked like he was reading cards and that kind of thing, and it was kind of imitating what George Carlin was doing at the time, and. Then years later, he attended some sort of a thing where George Carlin was there and he was in the audience, and Carlin kind of went up to him and said, "Brutal, man, brutal," as in like, yeah, that was a thing. But in any case, but I guess his George Carlin has passed away, and actually, his daughter had contacted Rick Moranis to get these bits or whatever, and Rick Moranis goes, "Hey, you know, I just want to let you know that I did that with all due respect, and it wasn't, you know, I wasn't trying to, anyway, it was just not the you know, was not the thing, you know, was I wasn't trying to dog him or anything. His daughter says, you know, no, that actually he took that and realized that he needed to up his game, right? And so, you know, because he realized that what he saw reflected back to him reflected badly on him. He's like, I don't want to be seen that way. So he changed how he was. And so it turned out to be a very positive thing. And I'm going, wow, these two comedians who I have a great deal of respect for, they, you know, they impacted each other, right? And it didn't, and Rick Moranis didn't know it until years later when his daughter, you know, when George Carlin's daughter said, no, that's the thing. And I don't know how true that is or not, but it is exactly the kind of thing that happens in life, right? Where you don't know who you're going to affect, right? You do something and it may be completely anonymous. They don't know you from Adam, but, you know, it could be a chance encounter in a grocery store or anything like that. Or, you know, somebody you sit next to on an airplane, whatever. And you may not know that person or be able to see that person again, but maybe you had some impact on that person. So I thought it was just kind of a great, even if it's not quote unquote true, it is the kind of thing that does happen in this world. And it is, and I'm, you know, in my heart, I can listen to that and I go, yeah, that actually sounds right. Because one thing I can say about George Carlin, I think, is that he was a realist, right? And so he could see, because, you know, how do you think we all figured out the truth? George Carlin saw through it a long time ago, and he's been, you know, his comedy is one of the things his comedy did was, you know, help sort of, you know, thin the veil a little bit and go, hey, wait a minute, these guys are all full of shit, you know?
100%.
Yeah, so I can totally see that. So, all right, I think we're done finally, though.
You know, I truly think...
Well, that's about it, really.
What?
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it, I gotta go.
Yeah, fuck it. We gotta go. We wanna go party. We would like to thank you, however, for joining us. But with that...
I'm so fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan fades back. Swoosh. And that's the game!
Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool. And fuck you, I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.